Hello and welcome to Savor, production of iHeartRadio. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we're talking about gochujang.
Because we are masochists and we already gave ourselves macaron in a French episode. And now we're going to tackle
Korean.
Yeah.
Why not?
I can think of some reasons, but they won't stop us because gochujang is amazing and worth talking about.
Oh, so worth talking about. And this was inspired by a conversation that we had after we wrapped our last recording.
Right, between us and super producer Andrew, who had just eaten what sounded like a fantastic sandwich.
Yeah.
Which had gochujang on it. And I actually had never heard of gochujang until, I think, a year ago. My co-host over at Sminty, Samantha, she first was very angry and then enthusiastically introduced me to it, uses it in everything. And I know I've had it before. I'm confident I've had it before. I just didn't know what it was. And actually, today I made my once in every 2 to 3 weeks grocery store trip and I got some. And then I accidentally put a ton of it on my salad. And you know what I've learned is it's really strong by itself, but like when I mixed it up, it was pretty good.
Yeah.
It really like mellowed out.
It does. It does. It melds with other flavors really well. I was saying during that conversation, you know, I was like, heck yeah, Andrew, you put gochujang on your sandwich because gochujang goes on everything. if I am making pretty much anything savory, I'm just like, and here's the part where I put in a spoonful of gochujang because why not? Definitely all of my like marinades and stuff get some gochujang love. Salad dressings. Oh, yeah. Yeah. All the stuff. I started gaining exposure to Korean cuisine maybe about 8 or 10 years ago. Imagine that scene in Nightmare Before Christmas where like Jack Skellington is like prancing through Christmas Town, but it's like me in an H Mart, and that was about how it went.
Were you singing "What's This" as you?
I mean, probably. Yeah,
I can see it. I can see it.
Yeah.
I can
I was
only
like,
hope.
I don't know what most of this is, but I want to eat it immediately.
So many things to try.
Yes. Oh, yeah. And gochujang was one of the first things that I figured out was like completely necessary to my lifestyle.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited to start cooking with it myself, start using it myself. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, you can, we previously did an episode on kimchi that overlaps this in terms of the chili pepper part just a little bit. Also, glutinous rice comes up in here, and we have done an episode on that as well. I didn't look up when they happened, but I have so much faith in y'all to Google and figure it out.
I do, too. I do, too. But I suppose we should get to our question.
Oh, yeah, I suppose.
Yes. Gochujang. What is it?
Well, gochujang is a type of chili sauce that's so thick and so finely blended that it's more like a paste. And it's made with hot red chilies, rice flour, sometimes other flours, fermented soybeans, and salt, mixed with water and then allowed to all ferment together. And it winds up in a paste form either before or after both. It depends on how you're making it. But at any rate, other seasonings might be added too, like a garlic or onion or sweeteners. But the result is going to be this like deep crimson paste, thicker than ketchup, more like fresh ground peanut butter or maybe like a Marmite Vegemite kind of consistency.
Yeah.
And it's savory and spicy and salty and a little bit funky and sweet. And it can be used, as we have been saying, as a seasoning during cooking or a condiment in composing dishes or just at the table. A little does tend to go a long way. It's kind of powerful stuff. But yeah, as long as you like spice, you can kind of just blend it in as you please.
Yes, yes. It was delightful. I think the word I saw the most from Westernized American outlets describing gochujang was complex.
Yeah, it's kind of got all the flavors in there at once. And I love it. It's why it complements so many different things. But okay, let's go a little bit deeper into what this stuff is. So the word gochujang is composed of gochu, meaning chili pepper, in Korean, and jang, meaning a sauce or paste based in fermented soybeans. And the traditional way of making any kind of jang, including Korean soy sauce, is to start by boiling soybeans down for hours, like 6 hours, and then draining them and forming them into blocks, like toaster-sized, like pop-up toaster-sized blocks, yeah? Mm-hmm. And these are called meju, and they're wrapped in rice stalks and then allowed to hang dry and ferment for at least a couple weeks, like 20 to 90 days is a range that I have seen, which means that we are talking about bacteria poop and yeast poop.
I love being your hype woman in this. So excited for you every time.
Oh, thank you. I love it too. I'm glad that I feel like it's bringing us closer together every time.
Yep, I think so.
So the two main microbes at play here are Bacillus subtilis, which is this bacterium that's naturally found growing on rice stalks, and Aspergillus oryzae. Yeah, that one. Sure, let's go with that. Which is a domesticated strain of yeast that also favors growing on rice, but has been domesticated and is used for the fermentation of various starchy products from miso to shoju and shochu for thousands of years. It's been around. Sometimes this is called a koji mold. And so as these and other microbes grow on and in the meju, that block of cooked soybeans, those microbes digest some of those complex starches and other stuff and poop, sugars, and flavors. So when you're making a jang, traditionally, you take some of these meju blocks and place them in like a big old clay jar or pot, like 2 feet tall, like a 2/3 of a meter, and toss in whatever else your ingredients are. In the case of gochujang, chilies, rice flour, probably glutinous rice flour, it's a little bit sweeter, water, salt, whatever other seasonings you like. And you just let that vessel hang out for like 3 months to a year, usually outdoors, in a carefully chosen location. And during that time, further microbes further break stuff down and mitigate unpleasant flavors and create good flavors. This one paper I found published in the journal Food Science and Biotechnology back in 2011 found a total of 7 genuses and 31 species of microorganisms in the gochujang that they sampled, 7 homemade varieties and 5 commercial varieties, including, yeah, just like all kinds of fungi and yeasts and bacteria.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Oh.
And of course, however, that is probably not how the like millions of gallons of gochujang that are made commercially every year get created. There are all sorts of shortcuts you can take, like just cultivating koji mold on rice flakes and then powdering that and mixing it in with rice and soybean flours and your other ingredients. The fermentation process can be really tightly controlled so that you can control your final textures and flavors. Other grains can be used. You might boost the flavor with like yeast extracts or something like that. Different flavor profiles and viscosities have been developed for different markets. There's a whole paper from 2017 on the non-Newtonian characteristics of gochujang and chogochujang at different temperatures. And it made me so happy.
That's excellent. I want to know so much more about this.
Basically, yeah, they were just saying like, well, here's how it works. Go take this science and use it to make different kinds of those things. Cho gochujang being a related condiment that you make using gochujang and vinegar. But yeah.
Love it. I read an interview with a chef who teaches people how to make their own gochujang. Mm-hmm. And they said, they described the clay pots and jars as living, breathing things.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I read this beautiful article in Savoir about how jang are made. And yeah, the word for where they kept these pots was like, it involved the description garden. It was like garden of pots. And the whole thing, like, I felt like the dude in charge and us would really get along. Like, he was just like exclaiming how excited he was about mold the entire time. And oh, I loved it. It sounds like a like when you do it the traditional way, it seems like a really beautiful process if you consider mold to be beautiful.
Which we often do here. Not all mold, but some molds.
Many molds. Yeah.
Many molds. Well, speaking of, what about the nutrition?
Well, it does depend on how it's made, but generally, gochujang is one of those products that adds a lot of flavor for a low caloric load. So take that as you will. It can pack a lot of salt, so watch out for that if that's something that you're watching out for. And it has been long considered a digestive stimulant and like a general warmer upper or pepper upper of people. Some modern research suggests that some compounds found in gochujang may help rats better process fats in their systems, leading to better cholesterol levels. And some other research indicates that other compounds are in there that may have antioxidant and anti-cancer effects in humans. As always. As always. The human body is complicated. More research needs to be done before don't ingest medicinal levels of gochujang, probably. I mean, only eat it if you like it. And then eat as much as you want, I guess. But
I suppose we'd have to get down to brass tacks of what's a medicinal level.
That's true. It's medicinal in like the by the spoonful for me in terms of my mood.
Oh, yeah. Then we have to separate, like, you know, mental health,
right,
medicinal, and, you know, actual physiological medicinal. So several follow-up questions. But yes, just always consult a professional, which we are not.
Yeah. No.
We're professional, goofy food podcasters.
Right. A medical professional. Consult a medical professional.
A lot of clarifications here.
Ingesting medicinal levels of anything.
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So we don't have those numbers for you, but we do have some other numbers.
We do. And okay, this first one is a little dated. It's from 1999, but it's from an article from the Chili Pepper Institute.
Ooh.
And it was like a newsletter. And I read the whole thing, even though only the first portion was about gochujang, because I was in love with it. But according to this newsletter, red pepper accounts for 30% of annual vegetable production and 4.5% of gross agricultural product in South Korea. And it goes on to put per capita consumption at 2.5 kilograms in that country.
Ooh.
And the production value at $800 million.
Wow.
Yeah. And this kimchi also falls in there, like a lot of other things. But yeah. Gives you an idea of how important that pepper is.
Yeah.
Gochujang exports from South Korea went up 15% from 2017 to 2018, valued at $36.81 million. And most of those exports went to the United States and the United Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
One Korean news agency found that 21% of South Koreans make sure to pack gochujang when they travel abroad. Especially if they're going to be gone for a while.
Oh, yeah.
And I couldn't really find any other numbers to back that up, but I found a lot of anecdotal evidence. So I definitely believe it is a thing. And as someone who brings peanut butter with me,
right,
when I travel abroad, I'm on the wavelength. I got you.
Yeah. I did start packing some of those little tiny bottles of Tabasco.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sometimes. Yeah, yeah. That's in my...
You can never go wrong with hot sauce. Always have a hot sauce on hand.
It's useful for so many things.
It is. It is indeed. There is a gochujang festival. And the Sunchang Traditional Paste Museum is located on Fermented Paste Road.
That's in South Korea. I love everything about this. Yes. Yeah. I want so badly to go check out like how all these things are made and look at that museum and eat so much food. Maybe we can all trade. I'll bring extra little bottles of American hot sauce. We can all trade. I don't know. Mm-hmm.
I like this idea.
But yeah. If you think that you've never had this before, it's a possibility that, like Annie, you have, but you were unaware. I forgot to say in the "What is it?" section that it is one of the traditional accompaniments in a bowl of bibimbap. So if you've had that dish, which is a fairly common Korean dish here in the United States, it's that it's the red stuff that's on there.
Yes. Ah, so good.
So good. You mix it in. It makes everything kind of meld together. It adds this, so nice.
Yes.
This was a very hungry episode, y'all.
Yeah, for sure. Luckily, we both have some, so we can fix this.
Yes. but before we go do that, we are going to get into some history. But before we go do that, we are going to get into a quick break for a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. Thank you, Spencer.
Yes, thank you.
So, like we've talked about in several episodes, certainly every episode that's ever mentioned fermentation as a main thing involved in the food we're talking about, including the closely related kimchi, fermented foods have been around as a way to preserve foods for pretty much since people have been eating.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Because it's a great way to take something that is healthy and nice when it's fresh and make sure that you can eat it later when fresh foods may not be available.
Yes. And jeong themselves have been around for thousands of years. One thing I read that I wasn't able to find anywhere in English, so if anyone knows if this is true, is that there are three main jeongs, and gochujang was the last one introduced.
Yes, yes. The three, and I don't have the names of them right in front of me, so I'm not sure what they are off the top of my head. But yeah, it's basically soy sauce, a soy paste, and then chili soy paste, gochujang.
Yes, 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 yes. So this was something people would make, individual households would make on their own and in these clay pots. Gochujang's recorded history specifically goes back to either the 16th or 17th century, made with red chilies, which most likely arrived with European explorers towards the end of the 1500s. And this early gochujang was usually composed of meiji powder, rice flour or glutinous rice flour, and red pepper flour. Although, one of the first believed mentions of gochujang's predecessor is from a 9th century Chinese document detailing the perceived health benefits of eating a Korean pepper paste, as translated, that is believed to have ginger and green onion in it. And some sources claim that something similar to gochujang was historically used medicinally for all sorts of things, particularly ailments of the stomach. So many.
Yeah. I read that other spicy foods, like maybe black pepper corns, could have been used in place of chili peppers before the arrival of chili peppers from the Americas through whichever route they arrived through. I think possibly Japanese colonization.
Yeah.
But it's hard to track down. It's one of those things that is historically difficult for someone reading only in English.
To
truly ascertain.
Yes. Whatever the case, it didn't take long for the sauce gochujang to spread in Korea and for the use of it to diversify. One of the more popular varieties, sunchang gochujang, which, as we mentioned at the top, you might be able to tell it was a popular variety because that's where the museum is, it's where the festival is, was well-loved by kings during the Joseon dynasty. In fact, some of the very first recorded recipes were specifically meant to be made as gifts for the king. And one of the very first recorded recipes for gochujang comes from the 1720s, recorded by a royal physician. And physicians claimed gochujang saved the king's life in 1748.
Oh, my.
Yes. Powerful stuff. The first recorded written steps on the process of gochujang production in Hangul, the Korean language, appeared in 1806. Later recipes sometimes called for adding meats or jujube for sweetness.
Jujube being a kind of date.
Yes, and I'm very, very embarrassed to say I'm so glad I looked this up before because I was going to pronounce it like the candy. Jujube.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that would have been embarrassing.
That would have been my guess as well.
Yes. a disaster averted this one time.
This once.
Pronunciation. And then people will write in, no, I tried. I looked it up. But yeah, it was added for sweetness. Beginning in the 18th century, references to gochujang started popping up everywhere in Korea, from imperial documents to books to poetry. And it was essentially a staple by the 19th century in that country. Korean documents from the 19th and 20th century went into more detail about the production process, particularly how to speed up fermentation. One 20th century work included recipes for pan-fried gochujang, which I found fascinating, and uses of gochujang in soup, enough so that it implies that this ingredient was important to soups and stews at the time, which is something that is still around to this day.
Mm-hmm.
According to a 2020 BBC article, it's actually August 2020, so very recent as we record this article by Aaron Chang, adventurer Isabella Bird wrote about Korea in the 1890s that she observed, quote, sauces of pungent and objectionable odors, the basis of most of them being capsicums and fermented rotten beans, with an exclamation point.
Oh.
Yeah. She also observed that everyone in Korea ate gochujang, even babies.
Okay.
Yeah, she made a point to go out of her way. In the decades after the Korean War, industrialization allowed for working-class families and people who lived in cities to buy plastic containers of mass-produced gochujang. And beginning in 1987, the Korean Food Research Institute introduced a series of large-scale technologies to improve the harvesting of red chilies. Things like stem cutters, steam cleaners, and continuous roll mills. This allowed for the annual production of 70,000 tons of good quality red pepper powder. And in 2010, gochujang manufacturers teamed up with the Korean Food Research Institute to come up with the Gochujang Hot Taste Unit, or the GHU, to measure the spiciness of gochujang. Although, and please correct me if I'm wrong, listeners, from what I've read, it might be mostly arbitrary. I also thought this when I'm at a restaurant and they have the chili peppers next to things. I'm like, who decides what's a 3 and what's a 4?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I feel like it's really up to whatever chef is in the kitchen at that particular moment.
Yes, exactly. Because sometimes you get a 3 pepper and it's fine. And sometimes you get a 3 pepper and it's not fine.
And you are in trouble. Yes. And other times you're like, oh, man, this could have been spicier. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Hard agree.
Yes, yes. So this scale, the GHU, it grades from 0 to 100 with 5 labels: mildly hot, slightly hot, medium hot, very hot, and extremely hot. Which from what I, if I'm remembering correctly, that one's pretty rare. It's kind of like, and also from what I understand, this was sort of an effort to, I guess, reassure foreigners who weren't familiar with gochujang that it's not going to be that hot. Uh-huh. You know, like, it's okay.
Yeah.
Give it a try. You're not going to be miserable.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that this was in conjunction with a few other things happening. Also in 2010, South Korea's CJ Corporation began launching modified gochujang globally, starting with their American affiliate brand, Annie Chun's. And prior to this, gochujang had been available in Europe and the Americas, but imported and largely marketed specifically to Korean expats. So, you know, in the U.S., the market had only been worth some like $3 million a year. And they were, with this initiative, hoping for like $50 million by 2013. And I guess it's not quite there yet, but they are working towards it. They keep on expanding. As of 2018, the same company announced that they were nearing a release of halal gochujang, suitable for Muslim markets.
Yeah, and very recently, there's been a renewed interest in Korean heritage and health, coupled with more disposable income that has fostered the growth of a market for jang made the traditional way. Also, classes on how to learn how to do that. And at least in my anecdotal case, I feel like more and more people in my circle not only know about it, but love it and use it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we are very lucky here in Atlanta to have a strong Korean population that has opened up so many amazing, beautiful restaurants that I really miss going to the open top grill kind of situations right now with and just eating so much beautiful food. But yeah. So we have that, and we have Korean grocers, and so we can get some of these products perhaps more easily than other places in the United States might have access to. But I'd say it's a steady trend around the United States, a Korean style menu items on non-Korean menus, and I would venture to say that if you buy such a menu item and it is spicy and like a little savory and sweet and funky, gochujang is probably the key ingredient that is making it Korean.
Yes. And I did read, I can't remember if it was for this episode specifically, but that the dreaded millennials are more about trying new foods and having new experiences. So because of that, a lot of restaurants are expanding what they're offering, and it does include foods that, like Korean foods, or just more awareness of all those kinds of things and a desire to try all those kinds of things. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah, me too. Always want to try all the new food.
Well, we're probably both of us going to be having some gochujang in our future, but we do have a little bit more for you.
We do, but first we've got one more quick break for a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with Listener Mail. Complex layers.
Oh, okay.
You know what I love about this is I've realized, and I know, I think we said this once, but it ended up getting cut. You can hear the delay. Like, you're doing it. I can hear like, oh, that's the internet delay. But it's, other than that, it's like on point. So good job, Lauren.
you're good. These always come with gesticulations, and they really help. You're like a composer up there, just leading me.
Remember that time I almost destroyed the studio because I spun her out?
I do.
I get really into it. I'm just waiting for the day I do that in my home studio.
And knock all of your costumes off the racks and all your games off the shelves.
Yes. And then I'll just become one, like, what do I got in here? Winter Soldier with my Star Wars Harley Quinn mashup costume.
Oh, no. Yeah. I wonder what food item will finally do it.
Ooh. It's got to be, we already did cinnamon roll. That would have been probably the one, the obvious choice, but I'm sure there's one. There's one out there. It's going to make me spin, and everything's going to come crashing down. But that didn't happen today. So
not today.
We'll eagerly await that day. In the meantime, Cineva wrote, I was listening to your mojito episode today and just had to write in. Mojitos are one of my favorite drinks. So refreshing and delightful, though now I will definitely think twice before ordering one in a bar. I spent a week in Mexico back in February, and every day at the pool from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. was happy hour, where you order a drink and they bring you two.
Ooh.
Every day for a week between 11 and 1, my best friend and I had a pair of mojitos and chips and guacamole to go along with our poolside lounging. That sounds amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Best thing ever. Also, I was glad to hear you mention the mojito-flavored craze. When you first started talking, I thought, I have to tell them about mojito-flavored 7-Up. But then you mentioned it. So instead, I'll tell you my story about mojito-flavored 7-Up. My husband and I were in Paris on vacation for my birthday a couple of years ago, and one evening he just wasn't feeling well. So instead of going out to dinner, I just popped across the street to the little market and grabbed a couple of quick pasta meals and bottled beverages. Since my husband's stomach was bothering him, I grabbed a 7-Up, not really looking at it other than to see It was 7-Up. I get back to our room and he opens it and takes a swig. The look on his face is one of pure disgust. What? I ask, and he thrusts the bottle at me to try myself. I examine the bottle and notice the mojito label on it. I take a tentative sip. It has a sickly, sweet, minty, limey, medicine-y taste, and I'm sure I made my own face of pure disgust. I apologize profusely for not paying closer attention to the bottle and offered to go back to the store, but my husband shrugged it off and continued to drink it. Between the bubbles and the mint, it did manage to settle his stomach, but I definitely wouldn't recommend it.
Huh.
I think, too, and I'm not dismissing your reaction at all, but in my case, like, if I'm expecting one thing and I get another, like, the shock.
Yeah.
The other day, oh boy. I thought I was drinking. I was taking a big swig of water, and it was definitely a gin and tonic. And it took me many minutes to recover from just the shock of it. It wasn't that I was bad. Just normally don't take that big of a gulp of gin and tonic.
Of gin and tonic all at once. Yeah, yeah. I think the worst experience of that I ever had was I was eating, some like pieces of like chocolate covered fruit, you know?
Yeah.
And one of them, like, I thought because of the shape, it was going to be a ball of like melon, like honeydew maybe, or cantaloupe or something covered in chocolate, because it was the exact same shape as a melon ball.
Mm-hmm.
It was not melon. It was apple.
Oh.
And I was like, what is wrong with my life? Like, why? What have I done to deserve this? This is a punishment.
What have I wrought?
And then once I realized what it was, I was like, oh, this is fine. But like, I couldn't get over that initial reaction. I was like, no more of that.
Yeah. Yeah. My friends once, they thought I was being a big child and they thought I was hyping up my distaste for Dr. Pepper. So they switched out my Coke with Dr. Pepper.
Oh.
And I did the most infamous, like, projectile spit take. I mean, feet it went. Oh, I'm not messing around. I don't like Dr. Pepper. Don't try to trick me.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry that you had that experience. That sounds unpleasant.
It was. I haven't forgotten it. Like, that happened in middle school.
Clearly. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I assumed this was like 4 years ago. No,
nope.
This is like middle school. Cool.
Yep. But mm-hmm. I never forget.
Daniel wrote, I just listened to your episode on ice cream trucks, which made me think about the ice cream carts I saw in Singapore. Those little carts are usually owned by elderly ice cream uncles. They can be found in the tourist areas, but more so in residential areas and outside schools after classes end. While they sell all kinds of ice cream, their most iconic and popular offering is the ice cream sandwich. Not to be confused with the type of ice cream sandwich sold prepackaged, this dish consists of a thick chunk of ice cream, not scooped, but sliced from a big slab. This is then served wrapped in a slice of soft, rainbow-colored soft bread. This is a local favorite, and when I moved to Singapore, I had to try it. Unfortunately, when I got around to order it, the uncle gave me the durian varieties instead of the mango flavor I asked for. This experience has traumatized me so much that I haven't dared to try anything from the ice cream cart again ever since.
This is exactly what we're talking about.
This, right?
Same thing.
Expectations.
Yes.
Expectations. Yeah.
Yes. Also, I highly recommend any listeners look this up. It's really pretty. Like the rainbow colored bread sandwich. Oh my gosh.
Very pretty. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds, the mango flavor does sound amazing. I would probably also enjoy the durian flavor, but I would want to be expecting it.
I still have that ice cream, Lauren. It's waiting.
We... Like Cthulhu, it waits in our dreams.
In my freezer.
In your freezer. No. Okay. Well, yeah. Yeah. As soon as we plan a socially distanced hangout.
Yes, we'll have oysters, absinthe, durian ice cream. It's shaping up to be quite the event.
It is. Heck.
Well.
Well.
We will definitely figure that out. And in the meantime, thanks to both of those listeners for writing in. If you would like to write to us, you can. Our email is hello@saverpod.com.
We're also on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram @SaverPod, and we do hope to hear from you. Saver is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thanks, as always, to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard. Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way.